Today's program was brought to you by the Christmas Tree Farmers Association of New York, partnering with Grow NYC on a pilot project to make farm fresh trees and wreaths available at green markets. For more information, visit christmastreesny.org.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue.
You're listening to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Leyte. When not on the air, my job is to eat and drink and connect people. I'm out and abouting, having the very conversations that you hear here and working with my clients, which include chefs, restaurateurs, big brands, startups, those doing what's most innovative and delicious. Today, we're airing a November 2015 pre-Thanksgiving weekend afternoon coffee hang at Charlie Bird Restaurant in Soho, New York, with the chef Bobek of Geist Restaurant in Copenhagen. And Bo's landed into town recently to start something in New York. I had seen that he was in town and reached out before he announced to Jeff Gordonier of the New York Times that he's not just visiting, he's actually moved here. So now that the cat's out of the bag, we can dive deeper into Bo, the guy behind Geist, and his plans for the future. So pop-ups, they're the standard these days. The way that everybody tests out new restaurant ideas. But Bo's series of pop-ups, called The Bride of the Fox, will be anything but regular. They'll happen all over. On a boat, in a firehouse, on stage at the ballet, in a famous chef friend's apartment. And with Bo, we get to talking food and first kisses with this self-admitted late bloomer. We catch up about a recent research road trip and also fundraising tips. That is, the stunt that Bo once pulled to secure a bank loan. After this quick commercial break, we'll get to Bo.
Ever wonder where your Christmas tree came from? Now you don't have to. New York State-grown Christmas trees are now available in New York City. Trees grown on farms here in New York State are harvested just a few days before arriving to the city. Trees cut close to home stay fresh longer. And trees cut close to home travel less, which reduces fuel consumption of delivery vehicles. Did you know that buying a real tree helps to sustain agriculture in New York State by supporting local farmers and keeping important open space in agriculture production? The Christmas Tree Farmers Association of New York is partnering with Grow NYC on a pilot project to make farm-fresh trees and wreaths available at green markets in Brooklyn, Queens, and Manhattan. So when you shop local this holiday season, you can include the tree in that list. For more information and a full list of locations, visit christmastreesny.org.
Hi, this is Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. And you know, I remember my very first show, December 2009. Ooh, it was a cold winter. And my first guest was William Grimes from the New York Times. Now, the one specific I had to tell him was wear a hat, gloves, and a warm coat, because our studio had no heat. We had no heat in the winter. We had no air conditioning in the summertime. It was rough going, but we were a startup, and we had a good show, regardless of the fact that we could see our breath. So today, we still have hurdles to climb over, and the only way we can get there is with your help. So if you would please consider being a member and press that little beating heart button in the upper right-hand corner to donate. It's going to help us have heat and electricity and air conditioning and really good sound with really great guests. Thanks for listening.
So You have a very, very excellent Instagram. You do portraits, phenomenally.
Thank you.
How do you choose who to follow on Instagram?
Who I follow?
Mm-hmm.
I think I have... I have different vibes I tune into. Of course, there's the logical friends and family that I would follow. Then I tend to follow people that take amazing, realistically, pictures.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, I was very tuned into these photoshopped, extreme pictures, and now I'm getting more and more into... It has to be an amazing picture, but look realistic.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the whole food scene. People that are very inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
It can be within the wine culture. It can be a producer, a farmer. It can be anyone, in fact. And I like to... I'll follow people for a while and... if I get bored, I'll move on. Some I come back to, and I leave, and I come back to. I don't take it that serious. It's sort of like a state of my own mind.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like, this is where I can, once in a while, if I have a few minutes to zoom out, I can go in and just get like a direct bloodline into my DNA of inspiration. That's how I use it.
Your portraits are beautiful.
Thank you.
What if I'm going to go on the street, take a picture of someone, I'm taking a picture of you right now, what are some tips?
I think a tip for a good photo, there's so many. First of all, I would say the best tip is not to be afraid. Not to be afraid. I do, you just saw it just before we started this talk.
Mm-hmm.
I posted a picture of a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I call it Random Stranger. And this one was Random Stranger number 47. And the reason why I started Random Stranger is it's kind of me reminding myself of I need to not be afraid. I need to dare to go close. And there's something very... dangerous about going up to a human being in the moment and just look at them with a beautiful smile or nice eyes and say, I think you're extraordinary, can I take your photo? And
that's
then,
what you
and,
say to
and,
people.
And depending on whatever falls in, but a photo, I use my Instagram more like a diary.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of mood I am in. And what happens, I'll rarely promote if I eat at a restaurant. I rarely promote if I don't like it. I'm not into all this negative stuff. I mean, we should all project positivity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a hippie, but... another good thing is lines. Lines are... very in the photo, if you do a landscape and it's like, how do you say, when it's curvy, when it's on the wrong angle, when it makes, when it looks like the picture is shifting or falling or tipping, just remember to have lines that matches the realistic photo of what your eyes see. Otherwise, I would just say keep shooting, because it's like cooking food. You only get better if you keep doing it. And all of a sudden, you'll start noticing things, small little details that will develop you,
mm-hmm.
as a private photographer. I'm just an amateur. No, seriously.
So you've landed into town recently. When did you get here?
I decided almost 5 to 6 months ago that I wanted to move to New York. And I have to point out, I have a restaurant in Copenhagen called Geist, and I haven't left it. It's still my restaurant. I go back once a month to check up on it. But I decided I needed to challenge my own alphabet. I wanted to provoke myself a little bit, in a good way. So I decided to do a tour around America, mm-hmm. a road trip, and I got here to New York late August.
Late August. And
ish.
What was the point where you're like, okay, I need to mix things up for myself a little bit? But first of all, how old are you?
42.
Okay.
72.
So then, yeah, what happened?
What happened?
How did you decide that you wanted to leave?
Oh, you know. How do you know you're in love? How do you know you don't want to live together with a person? How do you know you know?
Don't you?
It's all about if you are willing to listen to what you realize.
Well, was there a moment that made you realize it? Or just one day you're walking?
I'm very fond of this thing called curiosity. About you can't forget to have open eyes. I know it sounds ridiculous, mm. but if
you're
you,
pretty ridiculous, actually.
I know. It's a good thing. I know.
You
high
know
five.
It. Okay, high five. Yeah.
What is it you really want to know?
I'm just talking with you.
I know.
There's not really. I mean.
No, but the thing is.
You're a good talker.
The thing is, it's kind of like if you go in, it's kind of like you sit in the car and you drive 60 miles on the road or the highway,
mm-hmm.
and then you speed up to dangerously 100 and you think it's crazy. After a certain amount of time, that will start to slow down again for you and it will become normal. And I guess that when things start to slow down, I like to push the accelerator again. And all of a sudden, wanting a new canvas to paint on, to see new produce, to meet new people. What better and more beautiful stadium in the world than come to Manhattan, New York?
I think I had a little bit of a similar experience recently where I've been exploring other cities, Berlin, London, etc. I'm going to go to Copenhagen at some point in the next couple months.
How lovely.
I'm very excited. And I just love being the stupidest person in the room.
Yeah.
It makes me a better version of myself.
I can see that.
You preserve the humility and all that.
Yeah. It's,
you know, once you feel like you got the handle on something, it's so valuable to mix it up. So there was not a moment. There was just one day you just woke up. I mean,
there's not like, I think, for example, when you cook, many people nowadays, it's very fashionable to say you have a test kitchen or a test lab or, and I think when I get most creative, when I'm inspired the most, is when I'm in the present now, right here, right now.
Mm.
And I think the best moment is when I'm in the zone, under conducting a service, and your thoughts are so focused on making a lovely evening. Having everyone work together, come together, and doing all the things we have to do. In that moment, mm-hmm. when your mind is free and you are not actually puppet mastering the things, that's the moment when an idea, a picture in your head will occur. And I really always try to remember myself that when that picture occurs, that you can't provoke yourself,
mm-hmm.
that I have to grab it. No matter what happens, I have to grab it. And it's out of control. That's why it's such a beautiful thing. Because it has no sender, but you're the receiver. But if you train yourself not to grab it, then you get immune and you end up not recognizing it.
Yep.
If it makes any sense.
Your metaphors are awesome. Awesome. So how do the Danes feel about you having someone on the side?
But
I have to go back because, you know, first I realized that you bring everything back to erotic metaphors, and then Jeff Gordonier said it in the article. I actually read the article on the way here because, you know, you try to get to know people. It's like watching a trailer for a movie before actually watching the movie, and that's actually why I...
What kind of movie is it?
Kind of like Lost in Translation. Yeah. Kind of like that movie.
That's some good characters in that movie, huh?
It's a very
Bill Murray, Scarlett Johansson.
I really like
Centauri Time.
I like Japan. Scarlett Johansson a
That's
lot.
That's everything I like.
In life.
Yes.
In that movie. So
one of the greatest movie of all time, a softie, The Groundhog Day.
You love.
With Bill Murray.
Okay. Is that your favorite?
No, not at all. But for a softie movie, I think that movie is a killer.
Really?
Yeah.
I have to go rewatch it.
But it has to snow outside. It has to be a little bit cold. You have to have, like, double dipper socks on. Drink hot cocoa. It has to be chick night.
You're super chickalicious. I have to.
Chickalicious.
Yeah. So. Are the Danes upset that you're splitting your time? Are they happy for you?
I hopefully hope that everyone is happy for me. I mean...
Have you gotten any pushback?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, the energy I'm getting is that I should, like, go conquer. Go seize the day. Go and do my best. But
from people. People are rooting you on.
No, I know the press. That's why I said before I haven't left Geist. The Danish media have sort of... they've chosen a different angle. They've made a conclusion without asking me and sort of like tried to, hey, I've left. But yeah. I haven't actually left.
Right. It's amazing what reporters do these days. Not doing the reporting, right?
Yeah, I guess. I. Yeah.
You say that when you tell people that you've landed in New York, that people's chefs, fellow chefs, friends of yours, people who care about you, their first question is, what PR firm are you working with?
Yeah.
It's weird, right?
It's very weird. I guess that the city is so difficult to penetrate. And it's so expensive or costly to open a restaurant that you need to have a PR firm so you don't fuck it up.
Like before they even ask you what kind of food are you cooking?
Exactly. It's weird. But I guess that's how we're all learning.
You compare dishes to first kisses.
Yes.
How does that work?
The thing about a kiss is a first kiss is very vulnerable. Hopefully there's a good vibe and a good energy.
Sometimes
that
not.
Both parties are interested in the first kiss.
Okay.
But the thing about a first kiss also, there's that kind of nervousness. Tension, because one part has to go for it.
Yeah.
One part has to jump. And, like, if it's not accepted, if it's not okay, then it's like, stop, okay, bye-bye, don't want to see you, don't want to be with you.
But I feel like if you're a good kisser, it's always good, right?
What I like about a first kiss is it's such a defining moment. You are present. I think there's a lot of situations where people are they're not so focused anymore. I'm not talking about we should all just look in deep into each other's eyes and not look what else is happening in the room or anything, but I think we easily get distracted. And when you tend to go for the first kiss, there's definitely only two people in the room. And I like that kind of attention. Who still lives is in perfect shape, the age of 72. Is by far the strength of the everything that's within me, in my DNA. She works with cafeterias and restaurants that she's in charge of on a larger scale. She doesn't own them.
So she runs the ops for...
Yes, yes.
So she's got the food organization part of
you. In a very old school way.
Mm-hmm.
My father was a policeman. He's just turned 80.
My grandpa was a policeman.
He was?
In Taiwan, yeah.
In Taiwan?
Mm-hmm.
I could only imagine to be... That must be crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then...
I think I got my... I remember all the kids being divorced when I was a child.
You mean the parents have been divorced?
Yeah, the parents were divorced. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I'm still trying to learn this language called English. You have to forgive me. And everyone wanted to come home to where we live to eat a warm meal. We always ate at 6 p.m.
So your mom cooked?
Boiled potatoes.
You
some sort of good. No, I'm a lonely child.
Oh, wow. But it explains a lot.
What does it explain? Hey, do you want to hear the thing or do you want to hear the thing? What does it explain?
Oh, just, center of attention, blah, blah, blah.
And that comes from you?
Okay, keep on going.
Okay, mm-hmm. So we're moving on.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
We'll talk about the center of attention.
I don't know. I was a late bloomer.
Okay.
Maybe I'm doing sort of like the Revenge of the Nerd kind of thing.
Oh, wow.
I didn't start cooking before I was 24.
Okay, so then what was your high school stereotype? Like, were you like a big loser?
I was a tall, fat loser.
You were fat. Okay.
I'm still fat. I mean, I have a beautiful chest when I stand under my head. No, I'm not. I think I was pretty much average, a little bit under-intelligent, didn't really... I think the big change in my game was all of a sudden I realized that work wasn't something you did to provide yourself with a house and then you had fun and went out with your friends, that work could actually be fun.
Okay, that but when work, did you realize that?
24.
So
I was in the, I was doing my, just finished my national service in the army, came back from ex-Yugoslavia. They were back in 93. Yeah, I was with United Nations for 6 months. And there I basically just realized, because we had to cook ourselves, I realized if you put salt on a potato, it just tastes so much more delicious. So I thought, ooh, this is curious. And then all of a sudden, a few in the same group, we were a party of six, when we were out at the hotspots, they were like, "Bo, you baked the potato rather than boiling so it became white and frothy. Would you like to cook tomorrow? I'll do whatever you want me to do." And all of a sudden, I think it all happened within the last month of the 6 months. I was basically cooking every day. We're not talking elaborate. It's sort of like a housewife would even be 10 times better. It was just young boys trying to stay...
Alive?
Yeah, alive with something cooked.
Did your mom cook? Yes, she
every
did.
Day.
She's a good cook?
Every day. Fantastic cook.
Okay.
My father is also a fantastic cook.
So what kind of home food would you eat as a little kid? Like, certainly not the stuff you serve
no,
at
no,
Geist.
No. Classical, heavy, rich food.
Danish.
when I say rich, is it was kind of food that came from a period when you had more physical work.
Right.
That you needed energy.
So some examples, because I think, you know...
Always boiled potatoes.
Okay.
Every day, boiled potatoes. On the table would always be pickles, like pickled cucumbers, pickled small onions, capers. There would be, basically, it represented acidity. There would always be HB sauce, if you know what that is. There would always be Worcester sauce.
Yeah, what's HB?
HB, it's sort of like... I don't know how to translate it, actually.
So can you describe how it tastes?
It's like... Like, if you take a cube from Oscar or kind of... And you make it into a liquid that's a little bit jellified. So it's sort of like... Almost like a spicy... ketchup version without being ketchup,
okay,
but much more brown and dark and
spiciness. Spicy, darker, brown, yeah, ketchup-y thing, umami-ish, almost like
totally.
You took Worcestershire sauce and condensed it.
Then there would always be, depending on what the meal would be, but almost boiled vegetables of some sort,
mm-hmm,
and then it was a matter of choice of meat.
Okay.
On the table, and always a brown sauce.
Okay.
You know, you cook off the pan, you...
The jus.
Yes,
the
and
stuff.
Yeah, and you take the potato water and you add a little coloring to it, and that would be always sauce.
So
and every 30 days, if we would have a pasta dish or a rice dish, the natural comment from my father would always be, "Are we not having potatoes anymore?" No, I love them to death, both of them. I think, actually, I learned a lot of things there because I learned the value of putting a decent meal on the table is not easy.
Yep.
And this sitting around the table, not watching television, being present, is very relevant in my daily life today.
Are your mom and dad still together?
Yeah, they've been all their lives.
Wow.
Yeah. Talk about a pressure on me, huh?
Right. I don't know if I have a lot of hope for you.
No.
You're addicted to the first kiss.
I guess I am. Well, so, that's your judgment of me.
I'm not judging. I'm just observing.
Okay.
I'm observing that you, I think we're both very intense. You're very intense.
Me?
Yes. Yes.
Moi?
Yes. And, you know, we talk about walking into the room and... You know, wanting to be normal for a second, because I think we're a little bit abnormal.
Mm.
And still, it's difficult to be normal.
But there's a beauty in wanting to kick the ball down the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
When you are a late bloomer, you sort of get this constant feeling of that it's too late. So you speed up things.
Yep.
If you know what I mean.
Yep.
And depending on if you can handle the pace, it will take you beautiful places. Of course you will burn your hands along the way, you will get hurt, but you will have so many beautiful experiences. And it's all about having the guts to jump in.
So you're...
This is why I'm here.
Here,
this
like,
is probably why you found me.
Yeah.
Because you found me.
Huh. Well, I thought your Instagram was... There's something to it. And I just tend to reach out to people that I want to get to know better. I had no idea you were coming to New York.
No.
Mm-hmm. So, you... There's something to being somebody who's very charming. Like, are you comfortable with that? I mean, you know, you have a force of personality kind of thing.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You know what I mean? No?
Try again.
Just, I think the idea of being aware that you are persuasive and charming and that you can use that to do things, to make things happen. It's kind of a beautiful,
okay, I understand. I understand.
A beautiful thing. You know that you are.
No.
I appreciate.
But maybe that's what's beautiful, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But
otherwise, you'd be insufferable.
No, yeah, but do you think I'm up my own ass?
No, I just think it, I'm not making fun of you at all.
No. But what I mean is, thank you for the compliment.
Yeah, it's a very. I mean, you just when you I noticed that when you greet someone, you're like bah, like it's. You know, it's just that some people have like this extra bzzah.
But I would love when I meet people that they are super excited that when they see me, and I guess that's the energy I project, that rather than talk about it, I live it. I mean, without making it sound like it's something religious, I think it's a karma thing. It's all about what you put into the world, what you give. I remember the first time I was abroad as a chef was in 95 in London.
Mm-hmm. Where'd you cook?
I started at a place called Gavroche, and then later on I moved over to Macropierre White, the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember at a stage when I was at Marco's, I almost cried, but not cried, but dropped a few tears when I went home and also in the morning. And the bummer was that the tube I was on, the underground, had the end destination Heathrow Airport.
Mm-hmm.
So each time I was going home, I was reminded of or challenged with, you can go home.
Because it was so hard for you.
Yes. And I remember one night, I didn't know this happened when I was there. But looking back retrospectively, I realized, oh, that was that defining moment when I did a life-changing thing on the way I approach life. I just didn't understand it when I was in it. But what happened was, one night, I was sitting at home and I couldn't fall asleep even though I was dead. And I was so unhappy. And I asked myself the question, why are you unhappy? And I came to the conclusion that I was lonely. Because I went to work, got bullied.
Really?
Like,
yeah.
No, but...
Old school kitchen.
Mm-hmm. I'd been training for 3 months.
I just can't imagine anyone bullying you.
Yes, but I know I look like a lumberjack and stuff. But you know, when you've only been cooking for 3 months, you don't know anything. So it's a tough learning curve, at least the first 2 years. There's just things you need to understand. How you function, how you move, how you look at people, when to ask a question, when not to ask. What to do, what not to do. And I remember I came to the conclusion I was lonely, but not lonely in terms of I didn't feel wanted.
Yeah.
So I then said, what is it you're missing? It's companionship. So rather than going to bed, I just went to the pub. Mm-hmm. Because that was a huge part of the culture in London. I went down into the pub, even though it's so awkward going in alone. I went in alone and I had a beer, and you know what? Immediately someone came and talked to me, and they didn't judge me or anything. Maybe they did, but mm-hmm. that wasn't the debate. We're just jacket da 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 da. And I realized that it's all within me to make a decision how things should be. And I can actually be in control rather than letting other people be in control. And from then on, I guess, things move fast.
The name of your pop-up?
The Bride of the Fox.
Yeah, what's up with that?
What do you think of the name? Sounds like an Asian chick.
Sounds like an Asian chick?
Dating a Korean guy.
Really?
No, I'm just teasing.
An Asian chick dating a Korean guy. No, I have no idea what it means.
The Bride of the Fox... What happened was, While I made the decision of I wanted to open a restaurant in New York, and I came to the conclusion, or the simple fact is why, I realized that normally when you open a restaurant, you tend to motivate yourself by saying, you know what, the world need me cooking for you. Mm-hmm. You need me. Mm-hmm. But I realized that with New York, that New York actually doesn't need me. You have millions of restaurants, or more like 4,600 something mm-hmm. restaurants. It's actually me that needs New York. I need you more than you need me. So with that conclusion, I realized I needed to educate myself, because I do know a thing or two about three, five, about food, but what is my relationship with food in terms of American food and the palate, and what kicks and turns you on? So I decided to do this road trip, and while I was doing the road trip,
How many states did you hit up?
I think I've done 48-ish.
Really?
Really.
How long were you road tripping?
Plus minus almost 150 days-ish. Back and forth. I had some breaks and I went home. Mm-hmm.
What were you driving?
I was driving and flying.
Okay.
Rentals.
Okay.
Let's go rental. Mm-hmm. It's a mental. No. I was eating at one of my favorite restaurants. It's called Sasong, done by a guy called Joshua Skeens and an amazing crew as well. Mm-hmm. For some reason, the world hates him. I love him. I think they are absolutely amazing at what they do there. It's so relevant and real. It's about a true flavor. So for me, that is the closest I get to peace. Besides sitting at a sushi counter with four people in Japan somewhere, mm-hmm. or going to Hokkaido and eating buckwheat noodles in the snow. But Sasong is easier to get to than that. And I was eating there for the second day in a row, and we ended up being escorted next door, where they have a Japanese version of Sasong, and they decided to do the same meal again, but for more private, just for me and my friend. I was eating there with one of my really, really good friends, Chad Robinson, mm-hmm. Amazing baker, an even better surfer, and
really?
Even more important,
Chad surfs.
He surfs. Even more important, a fantastic human being. Really. He's one of the few guys I can call whenever I want to, and he'll pick up the phone. Very precious. And we have a mutual fondness mm-hmm. for Japanese food. And we were eating at Sasong, and it was one of those nights where Chad was just about to do a life-changing thing in his life, merging with another company.
Right.
And he was on the phone a little bit, and we had one of the most quiet meals. Like, we were both full, so we could sit together and not having to talk so much together. And it was very...
romantical.
No, not at all romantical.
Bromantical.
It was very...
Bromantical.
It was very peaceful. And then I realized we were only drinking sake. Mm-hmm. And when I came to that, I was like, okay, I'll need to do a pop-up. I want to do a pop-up.
Wait, what does that have to do with pop-up? Sake.
That's what happened in that peaceful moment.
Okay.
I came to the conclusion
in that moment. Okay.
I need to do a pop-up.
Okay.
And the bottle we were drinking was Bride of the Fox.
Oh, really?
Sake. And then I thought, this is a message.
Wow.
This is a message.
This is such a... Wow.
So,
I wonder what sake
is. It tastes delicious.
It's actually in English,
Bride of the Fox.
Not in Japanese.
No, no. Okay. It's in English. And then I thought...
I'm going to have to ask Mark Bright.
Then I thought, you know what? I'm going to name it The Bride of the Fox.
But it has no, I mean, besides this moment, it has, what is the bite of a fox? You know what I mean? Like,
it's fun. It's only supposed to make you think. It's supposed to, with many things in life, ask the question. What the answer is isn't that important. You know? Mm-hmm. I come from Scandinavia where everything needs to mean anything. Mean everything. One of the things I really love about New York is, and it sounds so corny to say, the diversity. What you gotta understand, when you eat extensively all the time, actually a city will rather fast be boiled down to maybe only 10 restaurants that you actually frequently go to. And we're not talking about the super elaborate restaurants, all-nighters, that I will occasionally though go to anyway, because I love it. What I like about New York that I really miss in Copenhagen is the influence of the Asian culture, where it's being taken serious, where it's not a tourist trap, where it's an event beyond. I love that.
Yeah, it's just completely unselfconscious, open late Japanese food that I forgot about. I forgot about that little street with Village Yokocho and with Angel Share and with this new place Otre Kyoya, and just like, I mean, it's my heaven. And anyway, so what? How did your
Hey, can I do a shout out?
Yeah.
If you have a restaurant that you think I should come and eat at, can't we make people hashtag me or tag me or something so I get the tip?
Oh, okay.
Oh, like, oh, go to this congee place, or go to this Jewish deli, or go to this... I would love to have some more inspiration on that side.
I'm here for you, Bo.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
we'll you. Call it Hey Bo.
Hey Bo.
Hashtag Hey Bo.
Hashtag Hey Bo. / the Bride of the Fox.
So how did your first pop-up go? I'm so bummed I missed it. Erg, I was en route back from Miami. First world problems.
The first pop-up, the first dinner. I like to approach it more like a dinner.
Right, but unfortunately, everyone calls it a pop-up.
Yes. For me, what it is it's, it will always be, or it will always be until I change it, a table. Where everyone can sit around it. And I was so fortunate that my good friend Enrique Olvera, that has the restaurant
Cosme,
he, even though he was on a book tour in Tel Aviv with his head chef Daniela,
so
gracefully let me enter their kitchen. And so I have...
Or as you would say, penetrate their kitchen.
Yeah, that's a bold word. I have to say. No, but the thing is, I've only given myself two dogmas. One dogma is I have to do everything on the day. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't become an elaborate pantry display of things. It needs to be pure, clean flavors that's cooked on the same day. The other dogma, which is the really challenging one, is I would like and hope I could keep doing it, that I'll present dishes that I've never done before. So rather than me presenting an array of classical dishes within my vocabulary, repertoire, I would like to challenge myself to approach all of these new things in a new fashion. And keep in mind...
So let's go shopping in Chinatown.
Yes, let's do that. But keep in mind, it's not so pretentious that I'm saying it's new food. It's just new for me. My reference is being challenged. My history needs to be challenged for me. This is something for me. for the diner, the customer, the human being at that table that night or that morning or whenever it's going to be. It turned out to be a beautiful night where down in the kitchen in the basement, Mayana, that was the sous chef of the night or head chef of the night, she agreed to not use their pass where they arrange all their food. They made their life more difficult, so I could invite a group of six people to have a dinner at their pass with heating lamps, everything, in the middle of the hurricane.
Yeah.
And then while Cosme was conducting a very beautiful service, I think they had more than 250 people that night.
They kill it, yeah.
I told my story for a group of people. So sort of a life within a life. And it was really magical.
So why the life within a life? Like, why is that appealing to you?
Who doesn't like layers? Mm-hmm. Who doesn't like complexity?
Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't like that? A deeper meaning to stuff.
My absolute favorite extended meal experience in New York was when Carlo Maracci did the Life Within a Life, the four top, 5:30 p.m., 20-something courses, optional pizza at the end of it. I discovered I have a separate stomach for pizza. It's kind of like a cheese course, but with the acidity of the tomato. It's a fucking beautiful thing. You know, you buy a bottle, you can BYO a bottle. I mean, it was so delicious. Just having somebody cook for just one table is like...
But did it exist every night?
Only on Tuesday and Wednesday, and only before Blanco.
So this is where the reference to the kiss comes in and becomes relevant.
Because it's just for you.
This will only happen one night at that space. Whatever Cosme decides in the future to do, or the next restaurant, or the next location, what they choose. But until that day, there hasn't been any eating, dining at that specific spot. That's what's important for me. And there can only be one first kiss, as we talked about, and we've talked about many times, is that special reference. Does it make sense, any of this?
It does.
Okay.
So let's make it make more sense. Give us a hint of what's coming up next and how we stay in touch with...
I'm doing the next... So...
You.
World Wide Web, as they say in the old days, thebrideofthefox.com.
Mm-hmm.
You go in, there's a short, very limited explanation about what The Bride of the Fox is about. Mm-hmm. And there... It will always tell you when is the next date going to be. And you shoot me an email on that request form. And you get into the pot of the lucky ones that can get picked. And I'll pick someone and I ask, do you want to join? If they say yes, and they can, if they're in the country or in Manhattan, if it's in Manhattan, then they're more than welcome.
So your other dream job, Bo, if you weren't... in food, like just complete, let's just say you suck at cooking. Other dream job, your retirement plan.
I don't do plan B's.
Okay, but just something else that you do.
Because I tend to think if you have a plan B, you always give up on plan A super fast. But if I were to, I think, to be honest, I'm very impressed with people that write. I would love the ability to be beautiful on a piece of paper.
My last question for you. You once needed a bank loan and then you cooked outside of the bank.
Correct.
Tell me about that. That's awesome.
No, you just read about it.
I know, but I want to know from you. It's one thing to read about it. It's another thing to know what happened on that day. You know?
What happened was I just finished my first head chef job at a beautiful restaurant called Jan Hurtigkok. Sadly, it doesn't exist anymore. The year was 2003, and was very fortunate. It was in the period of if you owned an apartment and you bought it in a good time, you gained a lot of, not gained, you your apartment went up in value. So I sold my apartment and used that free.
My profit.
English right now is so horrible. I used the profit from the apartment to travel the world. And when the money ran out, I just, okay, it's time to go home. And I wanted to open a restaurant, my first restaurant. And the year was 2004. And I got a really great deal. But I needed to form a company, which I needed the equivalent of $20,000. And I went to the bank, you know, logical. I have my CV, everything, A-OK, you know, top shape. And they wouldn't lend me money. And I was like, wow, what on earth to do? And I couldn't understand it. I have all the right things. I've done everything correct. Why on earth don't you believe in me? Yeah, but every restaurant loses and go. You need to invest money to borrow money. I didn't understand it at that time. And then while I was at home, I came to the conclusion that, you know what? Being a banker is the absolute opposite end of the scale compared to being a chef. Because chefs take chances, risks. Mm-hmm. They cook sweetbreads, eat frog legs, snails, voluptuous things as caviar. You know, but nothing that's logical. And I realized that the bankers are the other end. Sorry if you're a banker.
Some bankers you can't.
But I realized, you know what? I need to make this, I need to bring this down to earth so they understand my motives. So I borrowed a sort of like a campus kit. I don't know what you call it in English. You know, when you go camping and you want to do a fire.
Yep.
And I went outside the bank, equivalent of Union Square. Mm-hmm. And for lunch, I cooked a leek dish. And I went into my banking manager and Karen, mm-hmm. and I said, this is what I want to do in my future restaurant, if you would like to lend me some money. And she lent the money to me.
So she just like, yeah.
She laughed her ass off. And then like the same woman that said no, 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 said yes, yes, yes. You would probably say that's charming. I would say I'm just using my tools.
Fundraising tips from Bobek. Thank you so much for
You're welcome.
Hanging today.
Thank you.
And that was Chef Bobek of Geist Restaurant in Copenhagen. He's moved to town, moved to New York City. And before he opens up his spot here, he's doing a series of zany pop-ups. So you want to stay in touch with him. He's at thebrideofthefox.com, and I also love his Instagram. That's at Bobek, B-O-B-E-C-H. We're live 2 p.m. Eastern Wednesdays on Word of Mouth at heritageradionetwork.org. Thanks to the awesome Liz Smith and Jack Inslee for making the magic happen in the studio today. I'm your host, Leyte. Until next time, eat well, be swell.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.